Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 17, Cat, Rat, and Dog.
Here we go.
Here we go indeed. This chapter, like, As I was reading through it, I was like, I could feel my eyes like moving extra fast. Like, even though I've read this book so many times, like, I'm always listening to it. And I was reading it, and I was just like, and then what? Okay, what's this? Then where? What? Okay, yeah, no, you know, it's like, it's that chapter.
I know. I swear to you, because I normally listen to books at like a double speed or whatever. I think even Jim Dale, as he's narrating it, I think he gets excited and starts to read faster in this chapter. I was like, man, he's like starting to book it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, this is like moving. But yeah, we are in what I would have to call, you know, not just the meat of Prisoner of Azkaban, but like the filet mignon.
The filet mignon, if you will. Indeed. I mean, it's like, it's crazy because like you think, like, this chapter is nuts, but then the next chapter is also nuts. And then the next chapter is like, hey, what about time turners? And you're like, what? There's a whole extra twist at the end of this book?
I know. I am like, it's so fascinating to me. And I can't tell if it's like the way that we're reading. I can't tell if it's like maybe just because like we're at like the climax of the story or whatever. But like, I know Prisoner is lots of people's favorite books. And it has always been like, in my hindsight, I've always, like, a lot of times I will start my rereads just with Goblet because I'm like, I know what happens in 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, as I'm going through this, I'm like, this is so good.
Yeah. Yeah. This chapter especially is where things, because, like, the rest of the book is just going to be sort of little payoff after payoff after payoff. Because the first three books especially, you can tell were, like, all written with each other in mind.
Yeah.
Like, everything's set up very much so, and now you're finally getting all the little payoffs for, like, the first section of the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about the chapter art just a little bit, because we've got the kind of an aggressive looking Whomping Willow here. And I have never noticed this before. On the one side, I have seen Ron's legs kind of sticking out. But on the other, I have never noticed, because it almost looks like just a branch, but it's Sirius's tail.
Yeah, same thing. I never noticed it before either. And I think, it's really funny the way Ron's legs, looks like the tree's eating him.
It really does. Yes. Yeah. He's just being sucked into the vortex that is the tree. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of fun there. So great chapter art overall. You know, it's always funny to me as well, because like I feel like the depiction of the Whomping Willow in the films sort of being this like club fisted thing is never really how I picture like a willow tree to look.
Right.
But this is sort of similar to that, and I feel like this depiction does work for me. So you know, maybe it's like one of those things where it's like the disparity between a like pencil-esque drawing and like a CGI tree is like different enough to where like one of them somehow feels like unusual while the other one seems to like fit.
Yeah, my only thing about the Whomping Willow in like the movies is that like when even they keep showing you like the shots of the tree to like show the progression of the seasons or whatever outside the castle, and like the branches are always very pointed like upwards on it. Whereas, like, I feel like with a willow tree, it's like maybe there are some, but it's like its main effect is that its branches are hanging down.
It's willowy.
It's willowy. Yeah. So I'm always like, it doesn't look willowy enough. Not that I'm upset with, like, you know, them fighting the tree or having to weave through it or anything.
No. Sure. Looks good. Yeah. There you go. So it ends up working out well. But anyway, yeah. So it's kind of neat as well that, like, this installment, because the Whomping Willow, that's another one where I think my mind will play tricks on me sometimes, and if it's been a while since I've done my reread, I will form the memory that the crashing Fort Anglia, even though it's obviously a Chamber of Secrets artifact, happens in Prisoner.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like because the Whomping Willow ends up being so vital in book three, but you're introduced to it at the beginning of book two.
Well, just that, which is another great example of like how the first three books are very written, like with like a full mindset.
Yes.
Mind, where it's like, oh, yeah. I know the tree is definitely there because it was part of Chamber of Secrets.
Right.
But it's like, actually, it's a much bigger part of Prisoner of Azkaban, but you just get back to it and you're like, yeah, the Whomping Willow, of course.
Yeah. And that's like, that's good world building. It's kind of like you just get introduced to it, and like you don't have like the primary reason that it exists yet, but it's coming,
right? Like it's great. I feel like it's always really good world building when like a thing that you're right, its primary thing will come later,
right?
But it has an important thing earlier before you're aware that it's even a primary thing,
right. Yeah, like it's the one like kind of small caveat I would have with this is like it would almost be as if like Wormtail or Scabbers, rather, really specifically Scabbers, was described as missing the finger. Like that's only a detail that we get inside of this book.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Like, I don't think it's ever said that Scabbers is missing a finger before we get into Prisoner.
Okay.
We can fact check.
I think so. I'm like, is it like when Harry meets him on the train or something?
Right.
Yeah, there's like a large fat rat who's missing a toe. And you'd be like, oh.
Well, if that's the case, then that would be rather spectacular. But I feel like at the beginning of reading Prisoner, I looked this up and I was like, yeah, like this really is the first time we're given that detail. And I think a lot of times books will do that where it's almost like, you know, the author clearly like had a really good idea after getting through their first installment. They're
right.
Like, oh yeah, by the way, there's this backstory and this thing happened. And now because of that backstory, we're going to have that be like a vital part of the plot. Cool.
Oh, that is present in this chapter as well.
Is
and
it?
I'll
okay.
get to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
When we get to it. But so let's see, let's dive on into Cat, Rat, and Dog here.
Yes.
So coming out of the last chapter, they've of course heard the unmistakable sound of the swishing axe through the air, apparently beheading Buckbeak, which Buckbeak, I guess, made no sound upon dying, you know.
None.
Shriek, no nothing. Although now I love the imagery here. It says the last rays of the setting sun were casting a bloody light over the long shadowed ground, which
yikes.
I know, bloody light, which to me it makes it sound like this is like this is the sun setting on like Harry's like the innocent childhood Harry has maybe come to know. Like, you know what? Yeah, Voldemort attacked. The Chamber of Secrets was open. But you know what? Nothing. He, the man himself, was not really back. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
Like, he was close. He was almost there a couple of times. But, like, nothing was really set in motion. Like, as of the sun going down, that all that euphoria from the Quidditch World Cup, things are about to get a lot worse.
Yeah. No, it's true. Not the Quidditch World Cup.
Quidditch Cup at Hogwarts.
Yes, indeed.
And yeah.
Even that, you know, I think is, we even discussed it, I think, at the end of that chapter after Harry wins. But, like, you're right. Like, it's kind of like the last good day that Harry gets to have before things get real.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, Quidditch, I think, is a good representation of that in the series as a whole, because it's like, it's this thing that matters to Harry so much that he learns how to cast a Patronus so he can win Quidditch.
Yeah.
You know, versus, like, everything that's going to start to happen where it's like, you know, when he's defying expectations going forward, it's usually, like, all oriented in the fight against Voldemort.
Right.
Granted, the Triwizard Tournament, we don't know the full context. That's like why he's in there, but it seems like the suspicions are whirling around like, how did his name get in the cup? How did this happen? Who is pulling the strings? Like, what is going on?
It is interesting reading it like this because I've always felt like the name Goblet of Fire has felt like sort of like a weird like title for the book, because you're like, what is the, like, the goblet barely is in it, you know?
Right.
It's there for like a chapter and spits out his name, but it's like already now you can feel the setup. You're like, because of the prophecy. The prophecy is like Voldemort's coming back, which means you, the reader, kind of knows that it's Voldemort, and you're wondering like, how is it Voldemort?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? And you know, there's so many lines in the water for who it could be or how it could have happened, but it's man, sorry, I was just laughing at a joke someone made earlier at the office where they were suggesting that someone wrote like prank, like if Cedric wrote a prank name on their slip. The champion from Hogwarts is our hero, fought McButts, you know.
And Cedric stands up, and
Cedric's
like,
oh, sorry, I didn't think I'd get in. My bad, it's me. Okay.
He like walks past Dumbledore and lets out like a fake fart.
We're gonna have fun.
What a different version of Cedric than what we actually have.
Right. That'd be fantastic.
That does feel more like if Fred or George's name had come out.
Yeah. Like, what did they actually write down?
Right. Was it their real name or was it something silly?
Hopefully something silly. That would have been tremendous. But let's see. So they can hear, I guess, Hagrid howling with sadness, but that doesn't even make sense. It says, then behind them they heard a wild howling. Like, is it Hagrid? You know, because like Buckbeak didn't actually die. So is he crying out of happiness?
Yeah, he is crying out of happiness.
Okay.
I think that what they're hearing, and because I was trying to compare the chapters with the time turner from later, just so I wanted to know how these two scenes were unfolding the same way, because I was also caught on the howling bit, and I was like is he howling or is it something else?
Is that Sirius or
no? It is Hagrid, and what you're hearing is him like howling for joy. He's basically saying like, oh, Buckbeak, you set yourself free, like,
right,
you know, because now from Hagrid's perspective all he knows is that like everybody got to see Buckbeak outside. They know that Hagrid didn't let him go. So yeah. Hagrid isn't like attached to having like let a, you know, air quotes, criminal free or anything like that. And so like once they walk outside and Buckbeak's gone, it's like, no, what was anybody to do?
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, that's why he's howling.
But, okay.
But there's misplaced context that's otherwise going on for
the reader. So this is one where it's like time turner shenanigans have begun.
Yes.
Well, that even happened even in the last chapter. Time Turner shenanigans had begun.
True. Yep.
More sunset imagery happening here. It says, by the time they reached open ground, darkness was settling like a spell around them. And that's like, I think it's nice because it's basically saying, like, I mean, it's talking about it getting darker, but it's like, it's basically what we just said. It's like darkness in terms of like, it's like Voldemort is settling around them.
You're exactly right. Yep. Yeah. And I think this is especially ominous when you've got like, you know, if you're reading this all in one go versus like the way that we do it, like a little broken up like this. But if you've just been sitting there reading and you've heard the prophecy from Trelawney that said like, you know, that the reunite with his master, all that type of stuff going on, like that is the ominous cloud that is otherwise also hanging over the story from a first time reader's perspective.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, all right, the sun's going down. Like it's about to happen.
It's about to go down, man.
And quite frankly, it is.
It is. And then it's like, but like even with the prophecy in mind, you're like, oh man, Sirius, like if you are reading it your first time, you think they mean the prophecy is about Sirius Black.
Of course, yeah.
And sure enough, the dog is about to appear.
It is indeed.
Yeah. Yep. So things are going exactly, it's like you have been led right into the trap yourself. Ron is still holding Scabbers, the rat is wriggling madly, ouch, he bit me. And then you start to get like these tiny hints of like behavior about how like Sirius is acting versus how Peter is acting. So like Peter bites Ron here and it's like, oh, it sounds like, you know, Scabbers is just going crazy and you think it's because of Crookshanks, which I guess it sort of is, but it's like, this is like Scabbers or Peter acting in a little bit more villainous. Like he's doing damage.
Just a little bit of damage. I mean, after all, his one redeeming characteristic before was that he bit Goyle.
Yes.
You know, and now here he is biting Ron.
Right.
You know, so I mean, by comparison standards, I mean, that's an act of true evil.
Exactly.
If we were going to commend him for it. You know,
I know.
I mean, I'm mostly just kidding. That's not an advanced analysis. I'm just bringing that detail back up because I always thought it was ridiculous. He bit Goyle for us that one time.
Yeah.
Heroic.
Yeah. His one good thing. And then slinking toward them, his body low to the ground, wide yellow eyes glinting eerily in the darkness, was Crookshanks.
Ooh.
So Crookshanks is on the move. And you can just hear like Hermione like in like what is going through her head in the last half an hour where she has found Scabber, she has been absolved of Crookshank's murder, you know, like everything was like forgiven anyway, and now it's like, oh, now it's even better,
right?
Like he didn't eat Scabbers, like, oh my gosh, like, wow. And now, like, I can hear the desperation in Hermione's voice when she sees Crookshanks appear literally seconds after they've refound Scabbers, and she's just like, no, don't do the thing,
not again. Yes. Not again. Yeah. No. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But it's exactly like Sirius. It's like Crookshanks is like, I'm going to commit the murder I was imprisoned for, you know.
Yes. Yep. So Ron, I immediately upon having reunited with Scabbers, though, his dear passion for keeping Scabbers just healthy and alive,
oh, I know,
like, just murders right back with him. Like if anything, you almost felt like maybe like Ron didn't really care about Scabbers. He just felt like he had like grounds to be like mad at Hermione.
Right.
But like, nope, Scabbers is back, and he, you know, like the Dumbledore is down there, Fudge is down there. You know, you've got this guy with a silver glinting axe hanging out and everything. And then like, you know, Ron just throws off the invisibility cloak and goes pelting after his rat.
Yeah, like I highlighted that. I was like, I'm almost surprised he cares enough at this point. Because at this point, like, he's assumed Scabbers was dead. He's kind of gotten over it. He's forgiven Hermione. And now this rat just bit him and is like running away. It's like, dude, do you still care?
I honestly, like, that's the thing. It's like, you've already mourned the loss of this thing. Like, he clearly doesn't want to be near you for some reason.
Right. Like, you know, at this point, now you have to face the fact that it wasn't Crookshanks. He just ran away from you.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like, I mean, in a rather suspicious way. But no, it seems like it all comes right back. Even like the hatred of Crookshanks is right there, where, like, you know, he's like, Scabbers, come here. There was a loud thud. Gotcha. Get off, you stinking cat.
Oh, and this chapter so interesting for Hermione, because she seems like she, like, completely turns on Crookshanks for the length of the chapter.
Yeah.
Where she's just sort of like, gosh, I really, you know what? Me and Ron had that whole thing, and he was just totally right. Like, I am sorry. You know, like, there's no denying it anymore. Like, come on. You know, so that I think is interesting, because it's still going to turn out that she's more in the right about it.
She is. Yep. Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
So that's pretty interesting. But Ron amazingly manages to catch Scabbers in the grass. Just even though, like, can you imagine outpacing a cat to catch a rat?
Yeah, no, not, like, at all.
Not at all.
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, this is maybe like a little bit morbid, but back in the day when I was working in a pet store, I used to like sell mice and rats every day. And like, yeah, sometimes just inside of their like small glass containers that they were hanging out in, they were like hard to collect.
Yeah.
So the idea of like one being on the run away from you,
right,
with human-like intelligence fueling itself.
Yeah, like full adrenaline.
Yeah.
Get out of here now.
In the, what was our term for the darkness settling like a spell around,
yeah,
them? It's like the idea of catching a rat that doesn't want you at night by outpacing a cat seems ridiculous.
It seems crazy. And yet, you know, Ron shows his skills as a keeper, I suppose, and gets Scabbers back in his hands. Unbelievably. Out from underneath the cloak here, but then the soft pounding of the gigantic paws, something was bounding toward them out of the dark, an enormous pale-eyed jet black dog. And now I'm like, here we go. Sirius is on the scene.
I know. It is so exciting. It's like, okay, now it's not the Grimm anymore.
Yeah.
Now there are other people around to see it as well. It's
right.
Like, Harry, like, you almost, like, it's almost surprising that like, there's not a line from Harry that's like, y'all see it too, right?
Come on. It's right there.
It's not just me.
Yeah. And I love this. Harry reached for his wand, but too late. The dog had made an enormous leap, and the front paws hit him on the chest. So he actually kind of hits Harry here.
I know.
A little bit.
Yeah. I think like almost so hard that it says, the force of the leap had carried it too far. It rolled off him, dazed, feeling as though his ribs were broken.
I know.
Harry tried to stand up. It's like, serious. This was a bit of a miss.
I know. I think he's just sort of like, he sees Peter, he's in the open, and he like sees Harry like pull out his wand, and he's like, okay, don't hurt Harry, but don't let, like, I can't have anyone stopping me,
right?
You know, like, this is too important. So I think that's how I'm interpreting it as well.
I mean, and to be fair, this is a situation where it's like, there will be time to explain later.
Right.
He will not be upset that I knocked him over once he understands why I knocked him over.
Exactly.
But like, you know, we will worry about that problem when we get there.
Yes. So let's see. Ron's on his feet. The dog sprang back toward them. He pushed, I pushed Harry aside. The dog's jaws fastened instead around Ron. And it's like, that is like such a, it's so interesting how you're getting this from their point of view. It's like, in like the way it reads as if like, it like the dog is leaping for Harry and Ron pushes Harry out of the way and instead he gets bitten. And it's like, nope, you were the target the whole time, sir.
Right, right, yeah. Right. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
He's not getting Ron instead of Harry. He was always aiming for Ron.
Right, yes, yeah. Always aiming for Ron, because then he begins dragging Ron away as easily as though he were a rag doll, which makes me think like, I mean, Ron is still like a, what, like, 12, 13 year old kid. Like, he's heavy.
He's heavy. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, how old are you at 12, 13? Like eighth grade by our standards. So I was probably like, I bet I was over 5 feet tall at least. And Ron is always described as tall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, this is someone who is, you know, north of 120 pounds.
Like 100 pounds or something. He's just right across the grass. No problem.
Yeah.
Super. Yeah. No, not a problem at all. Let's see. Harry is getting up. He's blinking blood out of his eyes. I'm like, oh, that hurts.
I know. Yeah. It's like, okay. I mean, it's like the classic, like, you know, for the purposes of telling the story, like everybody kind of needs to be a bit like banged up in the process. Like
Very much so.
Every adventure Harry ever goes on, there's always blood coming out of him somewhere.
Always blood. So much blood, you know? And then let's see. Now they've reached the Whomping Willow. And so the branches are starting to whack them as well. Let's see. And they see Sirius drag Ron through the roots, breaking his gun with a sound like a gunshot, which, God, I hate the imagery of that.
Breaking his leg.
Breaking his leg. Yeah, what'd I say?
You said breaking his gun.
Breaking his gun. Yeah. Yeah. You know how Ron carries a gun? That's a wizard.
That's a muggle's gun.
Yeah. That's a muggle's wand.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, okay, yeah. It took us a few tries, but we got there in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to worry. But yeah, no, I mean, that is like, I mean, the idea of breaking a leg, you know, you and I like ski and snowboard and stuff. And I'm like, it's like my number one fear
of
that
sport
is that I'm just like, if I do it for enough of my whole life, it will probably inevitably happen.
Oh man. Yeah, and I know. Yeah. It is a terrible feeling. Not, I mean, just to think about.
I know, yeah.
Much
yeah,
less
yeah.
it happening. But man, Ron is going to be a real champ this chapter about the broken leg.
He is. Yeah. He's gonna hold up to it rather well.
Yep.
And either way, at this point, Harry and Hermione are also like, well, we got to get through. If that dog can get in, we can too.
Yep. I love the optimism because they are wrong.
right. Yeah.
This reminds me, not to get off book, but it reminds me of the sword tree in Name of the Wind.
Oh, I know.
Where
yes.
They, like, which also, I guess, is kind of described as a willow.
It is.
But yeah,
is.
Where Cillian has to dive between the spinning blades of the sword tree to get to the middle, and she just does it.
She just does it. I mean, maybe that's what's missing from the wizarding world, is that you need to have a greater appreciation for the random flow of the wind.
Exactly, right? Yeah. If only Harry had been studying the wind, this wouldn't be a problem.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Jeez. Instead, he has to rely on a cat.
All those people who hear us talk about Name of the Wind all the time are like, guys, stop.
Just stop.
Just let it go. Let it go.
We will not let it go.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. But Crookshanks, anyway, does dart forward. He does know the special knot on the tree, which abruptly causes the tree to turn to marble.
Yeah.
Stop moving. Not a leaf twitched or shook.
No, there's a moment here where like they're trying to get through the tree, and Hermione's like, oh, help, please. And it's like, who's she talking to? Or is she just sort of like panicking?
Like just pleading with anything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's what she's doing. But help comes. Crookshanks does it. Yep. Turns the tree to marble, I suppose. And then how did Crookshanks know? And Harry reveals, like, I love this line. He's friends with that dog, Harry said grimly.
No mistake.
I was
none
like,
whatsoever.
That is a great line right there. It's fantastic.
Because he's like the grim.
Because he's like the grim. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. That's like a little you know.
A little on the nose. Yeah. But so Harry follows Crookshanks into the tree, crawls through head first for some reason.
Why not?
I mean,
it's like dark hole under a tree. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, it's like, Harry, what if that had been like a 10-foot drop, dude? You know? Land straight on your face and die. Come on.
that's what if Harry landed on his face and died?
And died. And Sirius is like, oh, man.
You gotta be kidding me.
How could I have known he'd go through head first?
It's the least likely way to enter.
It's ridiculous.
Oh man, I do have to tell you that there's almost nothing that I hate more about any of the Harry Potter movies than the depiction of this very scene, though, which is when like Harry and Hermione are like swinging back and forth on the Whomping Willow, and then they like let go at exactly the right moment and just like fling themselves through the hole.
Oh,
it is the goofiest scene.
That scene in particular, you're right. It looks like it's like, for randomly in the middle of the movie, they're like, let's throw in a scene that'll look kind of like a bad 3D effect.
Yeah.
You know, like as if you're watching it in 3D and it's like, oh, I almost got hit by Ron and by Harry and Hermione.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, it's like, were you wearing your 3D glasses?
Yeah, like they make like a really funny face, like two camera, I think, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right,
just like, what's happening?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. Anyway. But so yeah, they get in there and they're basically sprinting along the passageway, which sounds like it is about as long as the one that leads to Honeydukes. So what do we decide? 50 minutes?
50 minutes? Yeah, yeah, they're like walking over a hunched here. That sounds terrible, honestly. It does sound,
honestly, if you're Ron and you're just like, stop dragging me, I will just come with you.
Ron's been dragged for 50 minutes by a dog with a broken leg.
Yeah.
Like he's having a rough time.
It's not been the best day for Ron.
Yeah. Let's see. We also get like Hermione asks where the tunnel comes out, and Harry remembers it's marked on the Marauder's map, but Fred and George said no one ever's gotten into it, which is just like nice setup from earlier.
Yeah.
Like this was like it was established this path was here. It's not randomly here. Fred and George mentioned it. It's another thing where it's like the map was mentioned. The passageways were mentioned. They talked about this one, but then he didn't use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So it's like, even in this situation, like Harry doesn't have to be surprised. They're like, well, I wonder why this isn't on the map. It's like, no, it is. You just can't get to it because the Whomping Willow will womp you.
Will womp you. Exactly. Let's see. So yeah, 50 minutes through there. And then they get into the Shrieking Shack, or I guess they don't know it yet, but they're in a room, very disordered, dusty room. Paper was peeling from the walls, which I love the idea that when they built the Shrieking Shack, Dumbledore was like, let's put up some wallpaper.
I know. Yeah.
Let's make it look nice in here.
Nice and cozy. Yeah. There's certainly something we could do. What color do you think it is? For whatever reason, I think it's lilac.
Oh, I was thinking like pink.
Like, I mean, like I was thinking like a light purple.
Like a light purple. Yeah. Okay,
so,
cool.
I mean, we're the same page. Yeah.
For sure.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Acorns. Y'all, I remember way back when I was 16 and opening my first checking account, there were two banks offering two different incentives. One would give you $20 for opening a student account, and the other would round up all of your purchases to the next whole dollar and put the excess into like a side account. So if the total was $19.25, the leftover 75 cents would go there. And I loved the idea of the roundups, but being a 16-year-old and mildly short-sighted, I took the $20. Years later, when I discovered that Acorns does exactly this thing, I was beyond thrilled and signed up right away. In fact, the day that my daughter Addison was born, I set up her own account and started sending all of my roundups to her for when she gets older. The thing is, Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invest your money for you. So head to acorns.com/griffin or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
But every piece of furniture was broken as though somebody had smashed it. The windows were all boarded up. We of course, are now learning that we are inside the Shrieking Shack.
Yes. And then Harry notes, like, ghosts didn't do that. And it's like, well, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good one. Yep.
Very haunted in these parts.
As they creep their way through, though, we also see them turn off their wands using the spell Nox.
Yes. This is, like, a fun bit of trivia. Like, wizards don't really have a way to turn lights out.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's part of like what makes the Deluminator such like an unusually powerful piece of magic, because
right.
it doesn't really exist many other places.
It doesn't. Like, you might wonder, like, you know, why does Dumbledore need the Deluminator? You know, why doesn't he just, like, cast a spell to turn the lights out? And it's like, they don't have a spell for that. They have Lumos, and then they have Nox to turn off Lumos, but you couldn't just, like, Nox a light
right,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you do need the Deluminator for something like that.
I was going to say the other fun fact here, though, is that this is also the first ever usage of Nox.
Oh, that is fun.
First time we hear him say it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then just not to get too far off the tracks here, our theory for Dumbledore and the Deluminator is that within the Deluminator, what's powering it and turning off the lights is an Obscurus.
Yes.
Or a piece of one, possibly a piece of, like, Ariana, his sister. Because the only other time in Harry Potter where you see magic turning off the lights is when in Fantastic Beasts, the first movie, when you're getting the point of view from Credence in Obscurus form.
In New York City.
In New York City. And as he goes past stuff, lights are turning off. And then we know that Dumbledore had a sister who was an Obscurus, and it has the same effect. And those are, like, the only two times we see it. If you're thinking in your mind, what about when Dumbledore puts out that candle in Prisoner of Azkaban at the beginning? That's a movie thing, and it's not canon, so that doesn't count.
And maybe it's just a handy Muggle magic trick.
Yeah, maybe he's just doing, like, a fun Muggle magic trick. But otherwise, there you go. That's the fun thing about Nox.
Yep, that is a neat one. The other thing I think is kind of interesting is that they then make it into the next door where they find a magnificent four-poster bed with dusty hangings, which this really is one of those things where, like, Dumbledore was kind of going all out. He's like, we'll plant an expensive and rare tree. It'll cover up a passageway. We'll build him a nice little, like, house with some like, wallpaper, a nice big four-poster.
Right. Also, don't skip over it. Harry SWAT kicks the door open.
Is that what it says?
No, it just says, wand held tightly before him, Harry kicked the door wide open.
Yes.
So I can just imagine, like, you know, like, gun drawn, boom!
I can
police!
Yeah.
Wizard!
Wizard!
Third, yeah! Here we go.
That's good. Yeah. They run in the room where they see Ron with his leg kind of sticking out at a strange angle. They run forward. They ask, where's the dog? And Ron's like, not a dog. Harry, it's a trap. He's the dog. He's an animagus.
Oh, man. Okay, so when we were kids, our dad would read us these books.
Yep.
And I think it got to about... I think we got to the chapter before this one, Professor Trelawney's prediction, when me being the oldest just could not wait anymore and just, like, read the rest of the book.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
I don't think I knew that.
Okay, I think I was just like, I'm just going to finish the book. And I went and I read it just by myself. So, and this was the chapter. And it was like, when I read that line, he's the dog, he's an animagus, I can, like, picture myself on our couch in our, like, childhood home. Like, I am still, like, I'm there. You know, this line transports me right back there.
Did you gasp?
I think I probably did. Like
no.
Whoa. No. Yeah. So that's, I feel like I'm in the living room right now.
The rest of this book is full of so many incredible flourishes where the payoffs are so good.
Yes. Yeah, really good, really good. So he's an animagus. Even when he's saying that, you don't entirely know who he means just yet. But then comes Sirius out of the shadows, doing such a dramatic entrance, not doing anything to make himself look like a good guy or anything.
Yeah. It's a little bit of both, because I think like whenever this is another one, whenever I think back to it, I'm like, I always think Sirius comes across as, like, a little bit too harsh, given the fact that he's actually, like, an innocent man who's there, like for, you know, kind of better intentions than we think.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a few lines that I think come across less than good if you're serious, but, like, a lot of times it really does come down to, like, your interpretation, your perspective.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're reading through the first time and you see his yellow teeth were bared in a grin, it was Sirius Black. Expelliarmus, he croaked, pointing at Ron's wand at them. It's like, it sounds bad, but, like, also for Sirius, it's like, you know, he could be smiling because he's like, Harry, like,
right.
You know, it's like he's getting to, like, see him.
Yes.
You
know,
and even disarming them. It's like I think he's just trying to give, like, a moment to
the use of Expelliarmus. I feel like is like a little hint where it's like earlier, like, Scabbers bites Ron, but here Sirius is using Expelliarmus, which is like Harry's move.
Right, right.
Which maybe not quite yet. It hasn't quite become a signature spell. That really happens more like in the graveyard.
Right.
Yeah. But like this is like he's disarming them. He's not hurting them in exactly. the moment.
Yep.
Yeah. And then let's see. He says, I thought you'd come and help your friend, he said hoarsely. And it's like, you're right. It's all context because like from Harry's point of view, this probably sounds like I knew I could count on the best intentions of, you know,
right.
the good guy
yes.
or whatever. But it's not. He's like complimenting him here. He's like, I knew. Ah, he's like, of course you would, you know.
Right. Because he's your like, father would have done the same for me.
Even that is like it's like he's trying to be so nice and it's coming across so bad. Oh, man. He's like, I'm grateful. Make everything much easier. Yeah, and it's like, then it says, the taunt about his father rang in Harry's ears, and it's like, it's not actually a taunt.
Yeah, he's genuinely complimenting him on the kind of friend that James also was.
Exactly, yep. exactly. And then it says, a boiling hate erupted in Harry's chest, leaving no place for fear. He wanted his wand back, not to defend himself, but to attack, to kill. Goodness, like I'm not sure Harry even ever gets this mad at Voldemort, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting like where the anger comes from with Harry at certain times
yeah.
because like yeah, you're exactly right. Like most of the time it's like it's good versus evil when it comes to Voldemort, but it never seems like hatred.
Right.
Like even when it comes down to like that final battle, like Harry is just like, "Dude, show remorse." Like it's like down to like the very last moment he's like, you can still do this. Like,
oh,
come
I know.
On.
I think because like with Voldemort, it's like it's never like personal. Like,
right.
The
true.
Prophet, like he is. Voldemort targets Harry not because he has any personal connection to him at all, besides the prophecy, and he kills his parents because of the prophecy. And it's like it's terrible and mean and awful and the worst. But it is like it is not like a personal thing to Harry. It is just about Harry's in Voldemort's way.
Right.
You know? And then, but like this is extremely personal because this is the person who told him how to do it.
Yes.
Who was their friend. And I think that's why it makes Harry like so much more angry at Sirius here than he ever seems to get at Voldemort.
Right.
Yeah. So, let's see. But then, gosh, Ron and Hermione, both having great chapters here. Ron speaks up, if you want to kill Harry, you'll have to kill us too. Which is just like, man, good for you, Ron, sitting there dragged for an hour underground with your broken leg, still ready to fight.
Yes.
You know?
I know. Yeah. And I love the line though, because it says something flickered in Black's shadowed eyes. And like, again, like maybe it sounds bad, but like what he is witnessing here is James's son having grown up to have friends who stand by Harry the same way.
I know. He's like seeing himself and Ron.
He
you
is.
Know?
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. Like, I would have died for my friends, you know?
Yes, you're
That's
right.
That's what's happening.
That's exactly
yeah.
it. Oh my gosh. Yes, yes. So it's like he's just like, y'all are us. Like, y'all are us. And,
right.
And he's right. Like, they are them.
Yes.
But in that moment, like, you know, Sirius does sort of like he sets aside his agenda and he's like, lie down. You're going to damage that leg even more. Like,
yeah.
He's attempting kindness.
Right, right. It's like, yeah. Like, all of a sudden, yeah, you will damage that leg more. This is another clue to, like, who the real Sirius Black is right here. And it's sort of like, but again, from their point of view, it's just like, all he's saying is get out of the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. This next line is like one of those where I'm like, Sirius, phrase it better,
oh
man.
My gosh. I know.
He
yes.
says, there will only be one murder here tonight, said Black, and his grin widened.
I'm like, dude, no, not time to be vague.
Yes.
Not time to be vague.
Crystal
Here's
clear.
What you should have said. Here's what, yeah. Yeah. Like, did you hear? Yeah. Sit down. And he's like, you'll have to kill all three of us. I'm only here for the rat. He's hiding as a man named Peter Pettigrew. Like,
yes.
That should have been your next sentence.
Yes. Or I'm not here to harm any of you.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, you're going to have to kill all three of us. It's like, I'm not going to hurt any of you.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear.
I mean, none of the three of you harm.
Right.
Like, that, you know. They might not believe you, but that's what you should say.
It's
not
what he goes with.
He goes like,
there will be one.
There will be, like, you'll have to kill all of us. We'll see. I'll only kill one of you. It's like, serious?
Come on, my man.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, this is, like, stop being so vague. This chapter is so well written, but also there is so much vagary being thrown around by the adults in the name of a fun reveal at the end of the chapter.
I'll take it for that reason.
But no one would talk like this.
No one would talk like this. I know. And then Harry starts egging him on. And he's like, what? You get soft in Azkaban?
Yeah, I know.
Hermione's like, Harry, you idiot. Yeah,
oh my gosh, I know. Harry also, this is also really good. It says, didn't care last time. Didn't mind slaughtering all those muggles to get to Pettigrew, which I feel like Peter's name is brought up here just in case you, the reader, have forgotten that, like, that kid they mentioned earlier. Like, hey, well, just remember, remember Pettigrew? Remember I said his name a couple times? Don't forget it.
No, I know.
It's going to be really important in a few pages.
And that is so, it's so vital.
Yeah.
Because it's like, now we know who Peter is beyond the shadow of a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
We all hate Peter.
Yes.
You know, but like, so it's like, you know, it's like, it's impossible for me to even think of a scenario where anybody reading this book doesn't know exactly who Pettigrew is.
Yeah.
But I could even imagine like younger me being like, who is Pettigrew?
I know. Yeah. Cause like, if you don't remember who Pettigrew is in the context of the story that he's the one Sirius apparently killed, then the final line of the chapter isn't going to have the payoff.
Exactly.
So it's like, don't forget. Remember that name. It happened earlier. Let me bring it up one more time.
Yep.
So there's that. Hermione tries to shut Harry up, and you know, Harry is not having it. He's like, he killed my mom and dad. And then, oh my gosh, let's see.
It's funny here because there's a line that I have highlighted. We just a few chapters ago, we had a terrible Harry and Ron chapter.
Yeah.
And I know that like a lot of the feedback, I thought it was really funny, and I think I even mentioned it in the following episode. But like, we were just like, man, Ron and Harry, they're just 13. You know, it's like, they're just idiots.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I think somebody had like left a comment that was like, I love how like so many of the plot holes are like eloquently explained with like well-researched theories and backed by tons of evidence. Then other times it's just like, they were 13. And it's like, the hilarious thing is that this book even uses that exact line. He had forgotten about magic. He had forgotten that he was a short and skinny 13, whereas Black was a tall, full-grown man. It's like, yeah, he is still a 13-year-old.
Yep.
Lest we forget.
As ever, though, yeah, good to mention, he'd forgotten about magic. They so often do. I think we brought that up a few times in the last chapter. Let's see. And then this is interesting, too. It's like this chapter is all, it's like all about like point of view, because Harry lunges at Sirius and it says, perhaps it was the shock of Harry doing something so stupid, but Black didn't raise the wand in time. And it's like, that's what's happening from Harry's point of view, but like Sirius does not want to hurt Harry.
Yes. And I think even in this instance, it's like, you know, like if Sirius sees Harry like lunging at him, he's just going to sort of be like, I'm not going to hurt you. You know, like I understand you don't have all the information yet. And so, I'm about to get socked.
Yeah.
And he does.
He gets like kicked and punched and yeah.
The description is the knuckles of Harry's other hand collided with the side of Black's head. And I'm like, ugh. Like that just, I mean, it sounds like it hurts.
Yeah. I mean, he punches him hard. And then it's like, you know, Sirius finds himself like maybe overwhelmed by the three of them. And eventually like, it sounds bad, but it says Black's free hand had found Harry's throat. You can just see him just like, just stop, you know, like I will explain. Like, guys.
Can you imagine though, like having made it this far and then the person you're actually trying to protect almost kills you?
Oh my gosh. I know. It's like, you can see his like absolute frustration. But then it says Ron had thrown himself on Black's wand and Harry had a faint clatter. And it's like Ron is doing this with a broken leg.
I know.
If my leg was broken, that's all I'm moving probably for the next couple months, you know, I'm not about to get in a fight with a convicted murderer 30 minutes later.
Hard agree.
Right. Yeah.
Me and you same page.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
If my leg is broken, I'm no good.
Yeah. Just count me out for this one, y'all. Yep. You know what? Yep. That's about it. So let's see, though. But they finally get the wand out of Sirius's hands, and he's sitting on the ground, and Harry is pointing the wand at him, and he says, "Going to kill me, Harry." And this scene reminds me so much of the Draco and Dumbledore scene.
Yes.
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 Like books
I wrote
later.
The same thing.
Yeah. It is a very similar situation. Like Harry is sitting there, he has a decision. Is he going to kill this person? And you know, he's kind of pleading with him, and the moment is here. No one is going to stop you. He tells him, you know, you killed my parents. Sirius continues to say the worst things in response. He says, I don't deny it.
Dude,
shut up.
I highlighted it. I said, Sirius, pick your words better.
I know. I don't deny it. Dude, what are you saying? He's like, oh my gosh, Sirius.
Yeah. But that being said, I do think Sirius does understand Harry reasonably well. He says, you've got to listen to me. You'll regret it if you don't. You don't understand. And I do think that this is like one of those things where it's like Sirius is like, eventually you're going to discover, like if you kill me right now, eventually you're going to discover the whole story and you're going to be really upset with yourself.
Yeah.
And he's right. That is exactly what would happen.
This is also someone pleading for their life, and it just seems like I'll say anything.
That's true.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. And then let's see. So then Harry's like, you've never heard her. You've never heard my mom trying to stop Voldemort killing me. And you did that. You did it. And it's like, oh, gosh, you can just feel Harry's pain coming off the page.
I know.
It's like that. Oh, boy, it hurts. It hurts. And then Crookshanks jumps on Sirius's lap and is starting to protect him. Like Hermione gives a dry sob. But it's like you can just Hermione's got to be feeling terrible about buying Crookshanks just now
in this particular moment. Yeah, she is like,
oh, what have I done? You know,
right. Yeah, yeah. My cat is actively protecting a convicted murderer.
Yeah.
Do you think at all does any of this help rein you back to the idea that Crookshanks once belonged to the Potters?
Like, absolutely, it does. I mean, there's a sentence here where it says, "If Blackwater," it says, "so as Harry's like, so what if you had to kill the cat too? He was, you know." If he was prepared to die trying to protect Black, that wasn't Harry's business. If Black wanted to save it, they'd only prove he cared more for Crookshanks than for Harry's parents. And I'm like, they're all mentioned in the same sentence right here, you know?
Right.
Yep, and I'm like, Crookshanks cares because he knew your parents, Harry.
Even the idea that Crookshanks would be like being like, Harry, no, this is not what they would have wanted. Like, I know more than you know.
Right.
You know, it's like, because I think on some level it's like, yes, it's a very smart cat. And it's like, sometimes that doesn't feel like enough to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how good of a character, judge of character, is Crookshanks?
Right.
It's like, it helps me a little bit more with the situation of Crookshanks knows the people involved.
Right.
And is like, nope, this is your parents' friend. Like,
right.
You know, I know that. You don't know that. I know you don't know that. I'm not going to let you hit him.
Right. Yeah. So let's see. So Harry raised the wand. Now was the moment to do it. Now was the moment to avenge his mother and father. He was going to kill Black. He had to kill Black. This was his chance.
Yep.
And then it says the seconds lengthened. And like that also very Draco and Dumbledore, where it's just like, yep, yep. Draco and Dumbledore.
Yep. Same. Yep. That's so funny. We have the exact same notes.
I know. I mean, it's a very similar situation.
It is a very similar situation. Know? Yep.
It's like, I guess it's, in Draco's scenario, he is being forced to kill somebody that he doesn't want to kill.
Right.
And now Harry is not being forced to kill somebody he does want to kill.
Yeah.
So it's a little inverse.
It's a little inverse, but I think to me what it says is that neither of them are killers.
Neither of them are killers. That's the takeaway. They both make the same decision in the end.
Right.
Like we talked about that in the Owlry last week. Like would Draco, or maybe it was just the review question, but like would Draco have accepted the protection? And it's like, or, you know, what if the Death Eaters hadn't shown up? Would Draco have taken the protection? And it's like, I think so.
Yeah. I think had he had more time. Yeah.
Also the mentioning of the seconds lengthening also just feels a little time turnery. Like, I'm not sure if that's like a little time joke there.
I could see it. Yeah. 100%. Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. And then this one, I was like, this I want to hear your thoughts on this. Okay. So Lupin, slams the door open downstairs. Hermione screams, we're up here. Harry still hasn't made the decision. It says, Black man has started a movement that almost dislodged Crookshanks. Harry gripped his wand convulsively. Do it now, said a voice in his head. All right. Do you think the voice is the Horcrux?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I do.
I think so.
I, as you were reading it,
do
I was
it
like,
now.
I think I know where he's going with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Harry, Harry had all the time in the world to do it.
Yeah.
And he clearly didn't.
Clearly didn't.
Where is this voice coming from?
Right. Where is this voice coming from?
It's not Harry.
It's not Harry.
Because it could have just done it any of these other times.
Right.
Like, as far as Harry is concerned, he's in a life or death situation with somebody who wants him dead.
And who he's wanted to kill. And who killed his parents.
And he has the upper hand on. Yeah. Like, there's no way what it takes is yet another person entering the room for Harry to finally be like, do it now, do it now. It's like, no.
Yeah, it's already unlikely. Been decided.
Yeah, yeah, I think, yeah, he would have done it. He would have done it.
Yeah.
So I think it is.
I think this is as angry as basically Harry will ever get, I think, for the rest of the story. Maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah. Certainly the most emotional he is whilst angry. Like, it is mentioning his desire to kill. Like, it never says anything. Like, he never gets towards there ever again.
Yep.
Even when he's facing Voldemort, he's like, remorse, Tom. Remorse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, this is where he's at. And I think, like, he's at his absolute... What I'm getting at is he's at his, like, the weakest he's ever going to be at in terms of, like, anger... or anything. It's like, and at no point really does the Horcrux inside of him ever like influence his decisions at all. It like lets him talk to snakes, and sometimes he can see in Voldemort's mind, but never does it like influence him. And I think this is the like single moment it is able to send any message to him, and it is still worthless. Still lands on deaf ears.
Yep.
Even though it is asking him to do something Harry himself thinks he wants to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But so pure is Harry that he does not.
His goodness still overpowers it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, because it says, but the footsteps were thundering up the stairs and Harry still hadn't done it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, then Lupin comes barreling in, ooh, shouts Expelliarmus. Harry's wand flows out of his hand once again. Lupin catches all three of them deftly. I just like that description.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at Lupin. Oh, wow. Hey.
I didn't realize he was an athlete.
Yeah, look at this guy. Look at this guy. Oh, man. Love that. Yeah. And so Harry stood there feeling suddenly empty. He hadn't done it. Good call, Harry.
Good call.
Yep. Turns out.
Yep. He hadn't done it. His nerve had failed him. And I highlighted that and I was like, no, his nerve didn't fail him. His instincts just won out.
His instincts, yes. Yeah. What's the opposite of failing him? Like
persevered.
Yeah, persevered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's Lupin's turn to be the vague master McVaguester, where he comes in and says, where is he, Sirius? And it's like, dude, just say, where's Peter? Just say, where's Peter?
I know.
You know?
I know.
Why are you saying he? Why are you being all vague about it, dude? Yeah. And he's going to continue to do this for the rest of the chapter in extremely infuriating fashion.
Yes.
Yes. But who was Lupin talking about? Indeed, Harry. Indeed. Black's face is quite expressionless. Then very slowly he raised an empty hand and pointed it straight at Ron. And this is like, I'm not sure what you're supposed to think in this moment. Like, wait, was Ron in on something here?
I actually feel like there's a mild missed opportunity here to have not had Ron be more adversarial throughout this book.
Right.
You know, to like where it's like, you're like, is it Ron? Like,
right.
is Ron the one, like, you know, I mean, and I suppose like Sirius gets in and like attacks Ron's bed. So like, you know, there's like the one instance where like something Sirius related was directly attached to Ron,
mm-hmm.
but like at no point has the book made us suspicious that like Ron could be like double crossing.
Yeah.
So it's like, and even the way that like, The rest of that sentence goes, it says, he raised his empty hand and pointed it straight at Ron, mystified. Harry glanced around at Ron, who looked bewildered.
Me?
So it even seems like in the same sentence, it's kind of like everybody's like, Ron?
I know.
Like, what do you... like, it's not a misdirect at all. Everybody's just like, Ron, what?
I know. Especially like, because like, it's not like Lupin would need to ask where Ron is.
true. Like, yeah.
Where is he? What do you mean he's right there?
Ronald Weasley?
The guy on the bed?
Red hair. Broken leg.
You've seen him. Yeah, so there's that. And then what's interesting here, Lupin is like working out like the truth like in the moment. So he says like, but then why hasn't he shown himself before now? Unless, as though he was seeing something beyond Black, something none of the rest could see. Unless he was the one. Unless you switched without telling me. Which means that Lupin has run from his office across the grounds through the Whomping Willow, through the whole like underground passage, without really knowing the truth. Like, he's seen Pettigrew on the map, but he hasn't like realize Sirius's innocence either.
Yes, exactly. Yep. And I think what I wrote here was I was highlighting all over this page, but I was like,
oh yeah,
this whole situation probably is like, it, like the one detail of knowing that Peter is still alive. Like I basically have it like written, like this probably clicks together for Lupin really quickly once you know everything.
Yeah.
Because like the last time you were ever around these people, this would have been like a really big decision. Like who was going to be the secret keeper for the Potters? Who betrayed who? And it's sort of like, wait a second. If Peter's still alive, like does that mean what I think it means?
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, I mean, Lupin's very smart anyway. So it's like, but I do think like everything is like kind of coming together for him in real time, because it's like you normally can't, with the belief that Sirius had like blown up the city block, that Peter had been destroyed. There was no point in time for Lupin to have ever second guessed it.
Right.
Like the painting, the writing was on the wall.
I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, And I mean, it seems like he was even told that Sirius was the secret keeper. It seems like that's the known information.
Right.
Which,
right.
When you think about it, it's like, well, like, why would you know who the secret keeper is? Like, you shouldn't know. People shouldn't know.
Right.
You know, like, even that, it's like sort of good, you know, planning on Sirius's part, except that Peter wasn't trustworthy. But it's like, I love his reaction too, because it just feels like ever since it happened, like, it's been a thorn in Lupin's side. Like, how could Sirius have done it? Like, it seems like this whole time he's been like holding out, like it can't have been true. It can't have been true. Like there were 50 witnesses and Peter's dead and Sirius is an Azkaban and he was their secret keeper and the Potters are dead, but it can't be true.
But yeah, Lupin would have known this friendship so like firsthand, so intimately,
right,
that he's like, Sirius betrayed James.
Right.
Like, there is nobody that Sirius loved more than James.
Right.
Like, it makes no sense.
Right. And it's like, he makes this one realization, the fact that Peter's alive, and he's like, you swear. Oh, my. Like, you know, you can, like, feel the relief, like, washing, or like, 13 years of pain, like, just coming away from him, like, in the moment. And he's just like, I knew it wasn't you. I knew it, you know, right. Like he just immediately helps him up and it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, like they embrace like a brother. And it's like, he immediately forgives him. He's like, I get it. I understand immediately the entire thing that's happened.
Yes. And, yeah. And I mean, this is a huge moment for Lupin, because the day that the Potters died, he lost James, Lily, Peter was killed by Sirius, by his yeah, recollection, and Sirius went to Azkaban forever. So Lupin, who is a werewolf and only had these four friends, lost all of them
in one night,
one fell swoop.
Yep.
So like for Lupin, this is the first time he has seen a friend in 12 years.
It is crazy.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a huge moment for Lupin.
Huge moment for him. And it's just like it must be such a relief.
Yes.
Such a relief for him. And of course, he's making all of these connections in his brain over the course of about a second. He doesn't understand everything fully yet, but he has got enough information to know that Sirius is innocent. And then seeing Lupin help Sirius makes Hermione think suddenly, like, oh my gosh, like maybe she's been suspecting him the whole time, and she outs him as a werewolf. Yeah, which is like such bad timing for everybody in the room.
Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed. I know. Yep, and it's definitely like one of those things where, like, I think as you see this scene sort of like unfold, yeah, like obviously all of a sudden the trio don't know what the heck is up with Lupin and why all of a sudden they're like buds.
Yeah,
And it's like this isn't good, you know, because like, now they feel like very betrayed. But I think you also get like an instant in one line from Ron, you can fully comprehend the way that the wizarding world sees werewolves. And it's this line here, I mean, where it just says, like, you know, Ron made a valiant effort to get up again, but fell back with a whimper of pain. Lupin made toward him, looking concerned, but Ron gasped, "Get away from me, werewolf."
Oh, I know.
And it's like, you get the whole scope of wizard prejudice in one sentence.
I mean, it's Ron and Hermione. You know, first of all, I mean, she's accusing him of being a werewolf, and then Hermione screams, "Harry, don't trust him. He's been helping Black get into the castle. He wants you dead too. He's a werewolf."
Yep.
And it's just like, yes. And then you're right, Ron has that line a few lines later, and it's like, yep, you're seeing the scope of the wizarding world, like what they think of werewolves. And it's like, because Ron and Hermione of all people are not where you'd expect prejudice of this kind to be coming from.
Yep.
Also, we sort of skipped over. There's a nice. I did too. But like when Lupin enters, just this is like it's such a tiny thing, but he addresses Sirius by his first name. He just says, "Where is he, Sirius?"
Oh, you know? Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Which is something. Harry, the entire time, this entire book, he's been calling him Black. And as soon as he learns the truth, he will switch too.
Oh.
Yeah, which is fun.
That is cool. Yeah. It's like, it's more of like a... Like
it's like a personal thing.
Yeah.
Or like a, oh, we're friends now.
Yes. First name basis.
Yep. So I love that little tiny detail and the way they refer to him. And then Lupin, as if he's just teaching a class, oh, how long have you known? And then, yeah, since Snape sent the essay and Lupin's like, yeah, that was such a lame move by Snape.
It's a very not cool move.
Yeah.
And this is another one of those, like, you know, I think I talked about it in the last chapter, but like, you know, Lupin also assigns then an essay on vampires.
Yes.
And that's sort of like my little, like, you know, in my headcanon, it's kind of like, okay, you know, this is Lupin kind of backhandedly getting back at Snape, being like, all right, you're gonna do one on werewolves, I'll do one on vampires,
let's go
you bat-like creature,
you weirdo. Yeah.
But he even says he assigned that essay hoping someone would realize what my symptoms meant. So it's like Lupin was not foiled by Snape's decision to do this. Like, he is like, Snape, I know exactly what you were doing. You were trying to get somebody to figure out what's going on with me. It's like,
yeah,
thank you for making the wolfsbane potion, that was not cool,
right?
And so it's like, yeah, so like the retaliation of doing the vampire essay, it's like, It does feel intentional to me.
Oh, all of Lupin's retaliations are so funny. I mean, the whole... I mean, I guess Snape could have been doing it because Lupin did the whole, like, vulture hat thing with Neville.
I guess, but, like, you know what? Snape did that to himself.
Snape did that to himself because, like, he was bullying Neville earlier that day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. And, you know, Lupin's not going to take that lying down from this guy, you know? Not at all.
Yep.
So, let's see. So Lupin reveals, much to the surprise of the trio, that the staff already knows he's a werewolf. And then Ron, another bad look here, just says, Dumbledore hired you when he knew you were a werewolf? Is he mad?
I know.
Like, Ron.
It's like, yeah, come on, man.
I know.
Yeah. And you know, he says, Lupin responds, some of the staff thought so, said Lupin. He had to work very hard to convince certain teachers that I'm trustworthy.
And
Snape. I was like, AKA Snape.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm trying to think, like, Flitwick, no way. McGonagall, not a problem.
Right.
Like, you know, who are we talking about here? Professor Binns?
I know.
You know,
yeah.
It's like he's going to be fine. He's already dead.
Yeah. Like, all these people would have just had him as a student, you
true,
know?
True. True.
Right. And they'd be like, what, Lupin? Yeah. He was a great student. Sure. Hire him on. I don't care.
Right.
Like, they would have known he was a werewolf the first time around.
Exactly. That's the other thing, too. It hasn't been that long.
It hasn't been that long. It's been like 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit more, but let's see. So he keeps trying to read it. I have not been helping Sirius. If you give me a chance, I'll explain. Again, no one's mentioning that Peter is alive and in the room.
Yep.
That's going to be the thing. I have not been helping Sirius, comma. Maybe instead of saying, if you'll give me a chance, I think you should say, I've not been helping Sirius. There is a, like, Peter Pettigrew is alive and in the room with us.
I know. Yeah. So say it out loud.
Say it out loud, people.
But they don't do it.
Yeah, they don't. Instead, Lupin decides to give them their wands back. You're armed. We're not. Now will you listen? Very good at negotiating the situation, Lupin is.
Well, I mean, and to be fair, like Lupin knows that both him and Sirius are not threats now. And so it's kind of like, I mean, I guess worst case scenario is that the kids are just kids and they end up just like...
I mean, worst case scenario is that Peter gets away.
Well, that is the worst case scenario, truly. Yes, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. There is a remarkable source of calm here where Scabbers this whole while must be desperately attempting to get away.
Oh, I know, right? So Ron, even while Ron is attacking Sirius and jumping on his leg and like he's holding on to Scabbers the whole time.
Yeah.
I guess Crookshanks is in the room. So if he really escapes, Crookshanks is still going to go after him.
For sure.
So there's
for
that.
Sure. Yeah.
But so they're trying to figure out, like, how did you know where we were? And it says the Marauder's map. It was in my office examining it. I can't believe Sirius doesn't speak up and he's like, you've got the map.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's like, it feels like a good comical version of this scene unfolding. Yeah. It's sort of like, no way, it's back.
Yeah. Guess what happened with Snape earlier this year?
Did it work?
Did it work?
And Lupin was like, I was there to see it.
Like, no. Like, guys. Yeah. So that Harry says, you know how to work it. And this is great. I love this whole secret. It's like, of course I know how to work it. I helped write it. I'm Mooney. That was my friend's nickname for me in school. And Harry's like suddenly like distracted by all of the others. Like, you wrote it? Like, I love all of this. He's just like, yes, I know how to work. I made it.
Yes. All good.
We've met.
Yeah. But he's like, I had an idea that you, Ron, Hermione might try and sneak out of the castle to visit Hagrid before his hippogriff was executed. And I was right, wasn't I?
Yeah, but you didn't do anything to stop them.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, of course you did absolutely nothing about it.
I know. Like, where were you earlier?
It's not like he was standing halfway down like the way to Hagrid's and was just like, I thought you might do this. Here you are. I can see you on the map. Invisibility cloak. Like, yeah, you know, whatever. But they don't do that.
I guess he doesn't. I mean, I guess he's like, maybe he's watching out for Sirius to show up or something.
Maybe so.
I guess, which he does, and then he gets into action here.
Right.
But like, see, yeah. And then I love the more the lines are revealed, like how much they're all friends. He says, yeah, you might have been wearing your father's old cloak, Harry. It's like, how do you know about the cloak? The number of times I saw James disappear under it. It's like, you could just, like, I love reading it, knowing how good friends they were. That's so fun. The point is, and this is interesting, even if you're wearing an invisibility cloak, you show up on the Marauder's map, which is, this is what I was talking about earlier, where, like, to me, it seems like, was it established in the concepts of the whole story that the invisibility cloak was a Deathly Hallow at this point? Because it feels like this is the sort of thing the cloak should be protecting against.
It does. I agree completely. Like, you know, it's like, I think the way that he phrases it, even if you're wearing an invisibility cloak, but he's not wearing just an invisibility cloak. He's wearing the invisibility cloak.
Exactly. Now, I suppose, having said that, the caveat could be that maybe normally the cloak would protect you from being seen by like a map enchanted with this, with the caveat being that the creator of the map was also the master of the cloak.
That is true. So like
there's
maybe,
that
right.
wiggle room if you wanna be that, under there.
We can maybe grant that because it feels a little bit like, even if James was like, that's weird, it's not working. I wonder if I can, like, you know, or like, you know, if Sirius is like, James, I keep adding you and it keeps disappearing every time you go under the cloak. James is like, let me try.
Right.
You know, like I could see a world where it's like, that's odd. I wonder why it made a difference when I did it.
Right.
And James would be like, I'm just better at magic than you. And then they like push each other's shoulders and like, you know, kind of grin and smile. And then he pull out a snitch and ruffle his hair.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm James Potter.
What fun. So I don't know. There's that. It is surprising to me. One, this is like Moody's eye. It's like, I can't believe Moody's eye can see through the cloak. I can't believe the map can see under the cloak, but they both can. So there's that. Excuse me. And then Lupin continues to be super vague. He says, I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought the map must be malfunctioning. How could he be with you? It's like, dude, stop being so vague. Just say Peter. How could Peter be with you?
Right.
He says, no one was with us. And then I saw another dot labeled Sirius Black. I saw him collide with you. I watched as he pulled two of you into the Whomping Willow. It's like, just say it, man.
One of us said wrong, Ron angrily. Which, you know what? Fair response, Ron.
Fair response.
Yeah.
Two of you. Do you think I could have a look at the rat? And it's like, as soon as he says that, it's like, what about the rat? He said evenly. Yeah, what's Scabbers got to do with it? Everything. And it's like, oh man, I highlighted everything in red. I was like, yes, very much everything.
Yes.
Yep.
I mean, he is basically the fulcrum around which the entire story will pivot.
Yes, it is. So Ron, I guess, is like totally okay. In the movie, Ron is like very like reluctant to hand Scabbers over. Here in the book, he's like, sure.
right. Hey, you can't possibly do more harm to him than I've already done to him.
Yeah. I mean,
look at the poor state of him.
Here we go. Let's see. What? What's my rat got to do with anything? He says, that's not a rat. You know, what do you mean? No, he's not. He's a wizard, an animagus, by the name of Peter Pettigrew.
What?
Peter Pettigrew? No way.
No way.
Oh, man. What a reveal about Peter Pettigrew. Of course, you don't know very much about Peter at all just yet, other than that he's supposed to be dead. yeah. and he's not. But now apparently you're like, wait, what? He's alive?
That is like one of the most shocking things about all of Prisoner of Azkaban, where it's like you can't believe that Ron's stupid rat is a human.
I know. That's the thing. You're like, Scabbers has been a rat the whole time?
Right, yeah.
Or has been a human the whole time?
It's like, no. Surely not.
Here comes the rest of the next chapter to tell you the full story. Now I'll give you a lot more context about Peter. And next chapter, Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs. Another great one. It's just more time in the shack. And now they're just like, these chapters always run together for me so much, because it's like, okay, end up in the Shrieking Sack, and then there's some amount of explanation, then there's a ton of explanation that Snape shows up at some point, then it all happens again because of the time turner.
I know.
When is happening when?
I know. Yeah. The end of this book is wild.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So very good one, but I love that. I love the Peter Pettigrew reveal. Everyone's speaking way too vague for the whole chapter. Like, they definitely could have been way more clearer from the beginning, but it's all okay because the reveal at the end is just so good. I'll take it.
Yes, absolutely. So that does bring us to the end of chapter 17, though. Jay, do you have a review for us?
Well, of course I do. Today's review comes from You Know Pooh.
Oh, wow. They'll be killed in their sleep.
The constipation sensation that's gripping the nation. All right. It says, hey, brother, I'm almost as obsessed with the podcast as I am Harry Potter. Even though I practically know the story by heart, I love hearing y'all's opinions and how you break down the story. My question for you is, what if they let Harry join the Order?
What if they let Harry join the Order? Okay, so let's see. I'm trying to understand where the question is coming from here. Like, do you mean join the Order instead of going back to school in year five?
I mean, I suppose join the Order and go back to school.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I think, so here's, as I'm thinking about it, because like Harry gets to Grimmauld Place and Sirius is like, he has a right to know. And, you know, they all have their big meeting and kind of tell him as much as the story, as much as the plot lets you know.
Yes.
You know, without giving away, you know, the ending or anything right up front.
Right.
And I think that's probably the main difference, is that if you're Harry, who is allowed to know some things but not be in the Order, you're allowed to know that Voldemort is looking for a weapon and yada, yada, yada. That's it. But if you are in the Order, you're probably allowed to know that Voldemort is looking for a prophecy that has to deal with you and Voldemort.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. And if that's the case, it's kind of interesting, because then you know, like, the duty that everybody keeps coming back from. You need to fix that.
I can do it while you talk.
Okay, if that's, because we keep seeing like different examples of like Tonks coming back and being like super sleepy and tired, and Arthur's like, I can cover for you tomorrow night, like, you
right.
know, I'm doing pretty good on sleep, and you would have a better idea of like what they're doing. The first thought that crossed my mind was like, they wouldn't let Harry guard the prophecy itself himself.
Absolutely not.
No, and that would be my immediate. I was like, well, if he's in the Order, then you know maybe he takes on one of these shifts, but then it was like, no, that's a terrible idea, because then he's just exactly where the Death Eaters are attempting to lure him in the first place.
All around, it probably would have made more sense to just like tell him the information up front, because like Dumbledore's real reason for not telling him is just that like, I wanted to protect your like childhood for like one more year. Like, I didn't want to put the burden of the prophecy on you, like, until I absolutely had to.
I mean, it's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating because, like, you think, because it means Dumbledore has to ask Harry to do all these things without any information. You know, he's like the Occlumency lessons with Snape. You know, he's like, just learn it. Okay? Like, what? You want me to get tortured by my least favorite person to learn a skill I'm bad at for reasons you won't tell me?
Meanwhile, you won't talk to me at all about anything.
I know. And like, especially because you want me to block out the kind of things that help save Ron's dad's life.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I feel like if Dumbledore, I mean, he could, like, here's how the conversation can otherwise go down if he's like a little more open about it, is like, here's the thing. What we're guarding is a prophecy. It has to do with you and Voldemort. It is a huge part of the reason that he attacked you that night. Fortunately, I know the prophecy, so I can tell it to you. However, Voldemort has been known to be able to read your mind. So if I tell you the prophecy, we might give him access to it.
Right.
So I need you to learn occlumency so that I can tell you the prophecy.
Right.
There you go.
There you go. And I think that's part of like the issue is that like, it, you know, Dumbledore's argument is like, you know, I want to give you more time to go live, you know, like have relationships, do the things that, you know, 15-year-olds are supposed to be doing, not focusing on like saving the world. And
yeah.
And I think that like I don't just find that to be like convenient for plot sake. I mean, don't get me wrong. It is convenient for plot sake. However, I do think it also fits with Dumbledore. Like, Dumbledore is the person who appreciates, like, candy and children's tales.
It fits with Dumbledore.
And, you know, it's like he... Dumbledore has known Harry since he was 11 properly, and he's seen this boy who, against all odds, keeps defying all expectations. He keeps doing the right thing. He keeps being extremely brave in the face of, like, life-threatening danger, and he's just like, you just deserve what any kid is supposed to have. You're just supposed to get to go and enjoy being a kid.
Right.
But, like, I think part of the problem is that, like, through year five, Harry's not having a good go at things.
He's not having a good go at things. Yeah, because, one, he can't talk to Dumbledore, and Umbridge is ruining his life.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, I mean, in Dumbledore's defense is that it's crucial for Harry to have these experiences because that's part of what makes him, like, human enough to defeat Voldemort.
Right.
Which, like... I mean, it ends up working out, but...
right. But like, that being said, though, his own best friends were already willing to die for him when they're 13.
Exactly,
you know, so it's like he's already shown a level of care and commitment and, you know, friendship to these people. Like, he has learned these things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I don't know. I mean, it's... If really after Goblet and after having his blood used to resurrect Voldemort, having witnessed Cedric be killed in the graveyard, having come back and been, you know, like one-on-one with Barty Crouch Jr., it's like, dude, his childhood set sail.
Oh, I know.
You know, like,
I know.
He, like, sure, all kids deserve that. They all should have that. Harry, unfortunately, is not being permitted that life.
Oh, like, I know. It's, you know, like you're really clinging to something that is like, yeah, been left behind, you know, the moment Voldemort came back.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it really is. It's kind of interesting. But I think, you know, the big thing there is that if Harry knows more about the Order, then he probably doesn't go there on, you know, a rescue mission or whatever to save Sirius.
Right.
Most likely. Hopefully.
I know. It's like, it depends on whether or not he, like, then the risk is that Harry is so curious about the prophecy that he just wants to go find out for himself.
Maybe so.
You know?
Yeah, take something into his own hands. I mean, he would still have every right to be frustrated with Dumbledore throughout the course of the year if Dumbledore continues to not talk to him.
Oh, I know. Like, if he tells him, like, there is a prophecy, but I can't tell you. And then I also don't talk to you.
But, I mean, yeah. That wouldn't seem like being inducted into the Order. So I can't decide if in this particular what if is the idea that, like, Dumbledore doesn't use that tact and Dumbledore just starts training him sooner.
It would seem a lot smarter because, like, at this point, Dumbledore, he should be looking into, like, Horcruxy things, right, at this point.
Should be looking to it. Yeah.
Right, because yeah. it's in the summer after this year that he finds the ring.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I guess during this year he's like maybe dealing with a lot of like Umbridge and sort of stuff, but like after he's ousted from the school, I think that's basically when his like real hunt begins.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. Like, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not going to go, as you say, quietly.
Yeah. right. He's like, oh, I don't want to go to Azkaban. I mean, I can get out, but like, why bother? You know,
I have other things I can.
I have things I need to do. Rings that need finding and such, you know.
There's a chance that the plot unfolds in a more similar capacity. I'm trying to think if there's a scenario where like what they realize is that Harry is being lured to the Department of Mysteries and like they go on purpose. Would there be a scenario where that happens and like, you know, the duel between Dumbledore and Voldemort also still happens? And
I mean, boy, I can almost see like if he's in the Order, maybe he talks to Sirius a lot more and like Sirius is so bothered by being cooped up that they like cook up their own little plan to like, you know, trap the Death Eaters or something.
I could see that. I could see that. I could even see a world where like Sirius is so frustrated and pent up and Harry wants to know what's in the prophecy so badly that like Sirius sees his role as Godfather and allegiance to Harry as greater than his commitment to the Order of the Phoenix.
Right. Like Harry deserves to know what's in the prophecy, like what got his parents killed and stuff. Yeah.
So instead of the argument being like, you know, with Molly, he deserves to know or whatever. It's like, this is like the, like, you know, this prophecy has to do with Harry. If he wants to get it, then I'm going to help him.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be like, Sirius, don't do that. And he's going to be like, well, I'm going to.
Yeah, exactly. I can definitely see something like that going down for sure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, it just seems like, it feels like he could have just told him about the occlumency stuff earlier. And that would have like also allowed Dumbledore to talk to Harry more directly.
Yeah, I think even Dumbledore regrets not teaching him occlumency himself at some point in time. So yeah. I even that, I think, is like one of those areas where like Dumbledore is like, yeah, I may have made a mistake on that one. That was maybe like a bad call.
Yeah. Yes. That is a mistake he admits openly. Or just like, there's got to be anyone else who can teach him.
Truly. I mean, send Lupin in there.
Send Lupin.
Yeah.
Why can't Lupin do it, man? What's he doing?
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like the best argument they have is that Snape is constantly having to maintain a degree of occlumency against Voldemort in particular, that it's like, who better to teach him? But it's like, but Snape hates Harry and Harry hates Snape. It's like,
yeah.
It's such a bad combination.
I mean, you could like sort of see where Dumbledore is coming from, where he's just like, you know, I've got all these people at my disposal. And this guy is basically like a 100, like a 1000 out of 100 at occlumency. So like, I mean, I know they don't like each other, but certainly they can overcome that in the name of defeating Voldemort, right?
They'll put their differences aside.
Of course. No.
There's nothing don't. Harry could have done about who his father was.
Right. Snape will understand. He barely holds a grudge, you know?
Yeah, there's a whole chapter that's literally titled Snape's Grudge.
I know. Oh, I mean, Snape holds grudges worse than any word of the whole book.
Yes, indeed. Yep.
Yeah.
So I think it would be interesting. It probably would make for a slightly less frustrating. It'll be curious to see how our conversations going through Order of the Phoenix are for that entire year's worth of content.
Basically because of this exact question. Like, yes. What if they just told him?
What if they just told him?
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that all of us, you know, are sitting on the sidelines screaming, like, somebody just talk to Harry, please.
Yeah.
Please tell him what's going on.
Because here's the other thing that, like, really hurts Dumbledore's argument is that, like, even if Voldemort got the prophecy, so what? Like, it would have mattered before he attacked him the first time, but like now, it doesn't really change anything.
Yeah.
Even if he has the information, it doesn't really change anything.
The prophecy, it's like, yeah, it really is interesting that they keep regarding it as this like secret weapon, and all it is like a paragraph of words.
Yeah.
You know, like that he's missing.
Yeah.
Because what is the vital bit that he doesn't have?
He doesn't have the bit that the Dark Lord will mark him as his equal.
Okay.
So, like, if he'd known that, he might not have attacked Harry as a baby because he'd be afraid of marking him as his equal.
Okay.
But that part's already been done at this point.
Right.
So.
That's true. Yeah, it's like the damage is already. Yeah.
Maybe then he would realize that, like, Harry is his equal or something. But, like, even if Voldemort has the prophecy and the prophecy says Harry is his equal, like, Voldemort's arrogance is such that he would never believe that.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
I mean, the real question is, like, is there a scenario where, like, Voldemort would have chosen to let somebody else attack Harry instead of himself if he had known the true contents of the prophecy?
I mean, the prophecy says one must die at the hands of the other, so I don't think so.
Well, I know. I mean, and that comes down to, like, the, you know, the prophecy only matters as much as anybody places stock in it, and Dumbledore's whole thing is that, like, Voldemort places stock in it, so it's
right.
Like, you know, like,
so it doesn't really matter whether you do, because he's going to keep trying to kill you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which guarantees that one will die at the hand of the other.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting what if, because I do think it would like satisfy, it would scratch an itch that so many of us have, which is like, tell Harry what is going on.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to know. He's not a child anymore. He doesn't get to be a child. Like, Voldemort has stolen that from him. Yes, it is a crime. Like, I'm not in favor of it. It's just true.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's...
Doesn't seem like it stops like the DA or anything, you know? And it's like, what does Dumbledore preserve by letting him do this? Like, you know, he gets to date Cho for a day,
you know? Like, a whole day.
I don't know. It's not like he's living it up out there.
If anything, that's another one too, where it's like, yeah, if love is what he's supposed to be learning, it's unfortunate that like the Ginny plot doesn't unfold earlier.
Yeah.
Because really, I think Harry's love, like, and his ability to love is so dialed into friendships and not romantic partners. Like,
yeah.
You know, it never feels to me like Harry's ability to love is something that is reflected in, like, you know, his romantic life.
Yeah.
His ability to love is, like, you know, against all odds in the face of, you know, like, extreme danger. Like, there are plenty of people who'd be like, no way. Like, I mean, in part, like, what he does with Ginny, where he's just basically like, we can't be together for
right.
this exact reason. But yeah, I mean, it's remarkable that Harry persists in every way. But yeah. I don't know.
Yep.
it's going to be a long Order of the Phoenix.
It's good. I mean, it was always going to be.
It was always
It's a frustrating book with Harry's wizard angst and Umbridge's just overt awfulness and
but
Dumbledore's poor decision making.
I think it'll make for great episodes, though.
Yeah,
it'll have us fired up.
It will. Yeah. It will. But I think that's going to do it for us this week there on Through the Gryffindor. Make sure you tune in next week where it's another really fun chapter at the Shrieking Shack. Chapter 18, Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.